everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR. This is Brian Wimpen. We're doing a special show today. We are live at the Kansas State SHRM Conference, and we're in Overland Park. Great convention center. Everything is really rolling along here. And before we get to our guest and I introduce him or have him introduce himself, just want to say thank you, of course, to Lori Mayer for always being such a good supporter and getting us in here to meet all the attendees, and really have enjoyed the experience. Once again, and a little shout out to Charlie Upton, the 2013 conference chair. So just to let you guys know, huge, huge bunch of strategic general credit available, and kicked it off this morning with one of our buddies, Jeff Tobe, who is coloring outside the lines, which is awesome, all about creative. And see, we're in the expo hall. You can probably hear it. This is a live part of the experience. So we'll see what the drawing's for. How about that? That's a live show. So let me introduce our guest, Darren Dupreece. Welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate you having me.
We'll get have you introduced here in a second. So for everybody, tomorrow we've got the keynote. Let me find it here. Pearl Roveras McDonald is tomorrow. And then one of my favorites, one of my buddies, Ryan Estes, who I call Rhino because we're tight. Not to his face, but that's all right. He's closing it out. So heck of a good lineup. So, well, Darren, again, thanks for being on the show. If you would introduce yourself to our millions of listeners, and then we'll roll into our big question.
Sure. No, thanks, Brian. I appreciate it. Once again, my name is Darren Dupreece. I'm the CEO of Validity Screening Solutions. We're an employment screening and drug testing firm located right here in Overland Park.
Well, that is perfect. So we ask the same question every single time. What is currently keeping you up at night with HR?
Well, I tell you what, this one I've got to put on two different hats, I guess, because my company supports HR professionals all over the country, but then at the same time I'm a business owner. So the one thing that I think is keeping us all up at night is this healthcare reform. We are hoping that Tuesday brings us some answers finally, but I'll leave that to the healthcare experts. In my particular world with our clients is compliance. You know, that's the thing that changes the most often for our clients, and it's what our team really tries to keep on top of to make sure of all our clients are doing what they need to be doing when they need to be doing it.
Well, and I know that is a huge buzz, and had some really interesting conversations last night about, with the exchange and all the thing that's going to kick off on October 1st. So I just hope everybody is doing their research, spending their time, and hope it goes better than expected. So that's the cynical positive side of me right there. So
well, you're doing better than I am right now, so let's go with your take.
So how about, I know that I want to talk real quick about what you presented this morning on a topic. So tell us what that was and kind of exactly what it was, and then how it went, questions you got, and kind of why you talked about that. So that's three questions I'm giving you right off the bat.
Okay, super. We're jumping right in feet first, huh? Well, this morning I gave a presentation on the effect of social networking in the recruiting and hiring process, which is kind of a mouthful for basically saying, what can employers do and what they can't do with social networking when they're considering their new applicants. The fun thing about this particular conversation that I had with a great room full of people was that, at least a great thing from my perspective, is there are no real right answers right now. It's so new that the marketplace is really defining what you can do and what you can't do almost on the fly. So what we spent the better part of an hour doing is talking about all the potential pratfalls with using social media to search and to quote-unquote, investigate an applicant before you get down the hiring road. What sounds as simple as just, even Googling somebody or checking out somebody's Facebook or LinkedIn page is not so easy when it comes to the element of recruiting and hiring, because every individual applicant or consumer, as the federal government likes to call them, have rights under certain federal guidelines, and even states have their own take on it. So, you know, what seems very easy and very innocuous with doing a basic internet search on somebody can lead to some significant problems for recruiters if they don't have a substantial policy predefined.
Would you say that the only thing wrong you could be doing right now is being resistant and ignoring social media in general, if you have a, if you're doing any kind of recruiting function?
Yeah, well, I think the problem is social media is anyway, it's really ubiquitous now. So there's an entire generation of HR professionals that knows nothing but social media, you know, in their personal life and professional life. So it's a natural progression for those professionals to want to use these basically free resources to learn a little bit more about their applicant, you know, even just do a quick scan before somebody comes in for an interview. But the problem is if a company doesn't have a policy outline to how they're going to use information that is obtained through these searches, it can be really problematic. If not, it can even put the company in a position of some potential litigation. You know, everything from discriminatory acts based upon somebody looking at a particular picture saying, nope, don't want to work with that person, or to misidentification. You know, somebody reading a pretty incendiary blog about a particular individual, but in turn has nothing to do with that individual. It's just somebody with the same name. So it, social media in the recruiting realm really any more causes more problems than it does provide solutions. The risk and reward is really off balance in this particular area.
Well, I'm gonna be the contrarian here and kind of give you a scenario. So, I mean, who is going to know, first of all, like, how are you going to validate that the process really is even happening, right? Because how do you know when somebody goes and Googles a bunch of candidates and comes up with, you know, random information and then decides, well, I'm just not going to talk to them first, so I'm not knocking them out. I'm just prioritizing who I speak with. How would you address that with a company?
Well, no, that's a very good point. And frankly, that's a point I hear quite often from, HR professionals I talk to. But here's kind of my stance on it is I like to put our clients in what I refer to as a defensible position, okay? So if you're going to look at that kind of as a pre-screen, just whether or not we're going to even take the interview situation, what I'm concerned about is somebody down the road bringing a lawsuit against that employer for unfair hiring practices. I really get concerned also with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission bringing an administrative action against an employer for unfair hiring practices as well. You know, I like to, in those types of situations where employers might be making what I refer to as arbitrary decisions or imbalanced decisions about who they're even going to consider, that can run a really razor-thin line about, between right and wrong from a consideration standpoint. So, you know, unless I can tell somebody that you're going to be absolutely defensible with this particular position, I like to handle it with kid gloves.
Well, I'm all about defensibility. I was in the assessment industry for, my gosh, 13 years, and 10 years before that was recruiting, 8 or 9 or 10 years, somewhere in there. I tried to block out a couple of bad years in there, so I don't even know what the number was. But yeah. So we're always about validity, defensibility, predictability, objective measurement. And so I think that's where obviously general information, when you start talking about information that's publicly available, like through
right.
a Google search, we're in a weird place, right? Because there's so little precedent that's been set. I think people are willing to take a lot of risk right now because it doesn't seem real. You know, Google
right.
search doesn't seem real because you do it every day, all day long. And so I think that that's going to be a really, really interesting horizon for when that starts happening. And I don't know, when do you think, I mean, just ballpark it, of course, be a futurist hat here, or put your futurist hat on. How long
okay.
before will you think that starts happening, where you start having repercussions for that?
Well, that's an interesting question you bring up. As a matter of fact, the exact question came up in my session. Somebody was looking for a chronology of when it's going to start to get a little bit more real. And my answer is pretty simple. And the problem right now, and you kind of already referenced it, there's not enough case law out there right now. There haven't been enough judgments. Now, there have been a number of cases brought, but a lot of them have been settled, so unfortunately it doesn't help us set the precedent right now. So until there's enough case law, this is going to kind of drag on in the periphery a little bit. But here's what my thought is. Pick any Fortune 500 company. Once that company loses one of these particular lawsuits is based uniquely on social media affecting somebody's hiring chances, or if, you know, heaven forbid, it turns into a class action lawsuit, then I think the floodgates open up. And here's what I'll equate it to. In the early 90s, a group of longtime smokers that had lung cancer fought lawsuits against the big tobacco companies. And at the time, everybody thought that was insane. You know, you smoked, you got lung cancer, now you're suing the tobacco companies for providing the cigarette. Well, everybody thought it was ludicrous until the first plaintiff won. And in the early 1990s, I believe it was 1993, a plaintiff out of Florida beat RJR. So that was a game changer, because the very next day, thousands of lawsuits were filed all over the country claiming the exact same thing. I think that's what's going to happen with this social media aspect. Somebody's going to beat one of the big Fortune 500s. And if those deep pockets lose, it's going to open up the floodgates for people to sue every company from mom-and-pop shops all the way back up to the big boys again. And I think that's going to be the landscape changer in the civil lawsuit arena regarding social networking's effect on recruiting.
Do you feel that, I mean, let's go to the end on this deal. So do you think that the platforms of the vendors – kind of to parallel the, you know, the RJ, you know, basically the tobacco settlements and everything, everybody got dragged into it. Do you think the Facebooks and the Twitters and all the vendors that are providing the technology, do you think potentially when it blows up, because I agree, I mean, sooner or later, the tidal wave, all it's going to take is the money to start flowing and it become an economic decision for people, that, you
right.
know, the focus is definitely going to change. So, do you think the vendors will get pulled into that? Again, futurism. You're not right or wrong with a futurism conversation.
No, I get what you're saying, and I don't think so. I think the social media platforms are going to be a little bit immune unless they get to the point that they are purporting information as false. Unless they're purporting you images or statements about you as belonging to somebody else, or vice versa. Now, are plaintiff attorneys going to try to drag Facebook and Twitter into it? Of course they are, because their pockets are the deepest. But I think what they're going to do is they're really going to focus on the liability and the, you know, maybe the quote recklessness, if you will, of a Fortune 500 company, you know, immediately disqualifying an applicant because they found something on a LinkedIn page that they didn't like.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, and I would agree with you completely, because they have really, I mean, there's so much information that nobody ever looks at, myself included, because I really don't care. I can't do anything about it. You know, when you're clicking on everything, setting up that account and every update that comes out, I mean, LinkedIn's just a whole round of updates on privacy and terms and, you know, I literally could care less. I mean, who knows? I mean, they could be taking my house right now, and I have no clue, because I'm never going to read that ever in my lifetime, right? So,
right.
You know, even if there's a discovery process or it's discoverable, you clicked on it, and we all use it every day, all day long. You've got to know. So I agree with you. I don't think the solution providers are going to get really dragged into that. They're just a technology. That's all, right?
Right, right. Well, you know, I'll give you a real tangible example, kind of alluding back to your original "what keeps you up at night" question. Here's one of the things that is a real cautionary tale that may happen. Now, let's take healthcare reform. Employers all over the country are arguably going to be looking for ways to save money on their healthcare plan. What if particular recruiting departments took up the prospect of searching LinkedIn or Facebook pages for references that could lead to an individual having some type of an ailment, a disability, a disease? You know, could that be a pre-screening tool used to keep people out of their healthcare pool? Of course it could. Now, is it the right thing to do? Of course it's not the right thing to do. But you could have, companies have done things worse than that, you know, in the history of time. But that is one of those types of things that social media can very easily identify, or at least perceptively identify, if you will, when you search somebody's Facebook page or LinkedIn page and see that they have joined the group, the American Cancer Society. You know, could a recruiter jump to the conclusion that, whoops, this person has or had or has cancer? We need to keep them out of our healthcare pool. You know, it's the type of tool that can be used for companies to literally profit by not hiring a certain class of individual. That's where I think we start really upping the ante on the severity of what might happen with social networking in the employment process.
So I'm going to jump around on you here a little bit in a second. Let me do a quick reset, everybody. You're listening to Drive Through HR. We're on with Darren Dupree from Validity Screening, talking about what kind of keeps him up at night, what keeps his clients up at night. And so my next question is big data. Where does big data and data aggregation and all the information that's out there that can be good things and bad things can be done with it, you know, where do you see that really getting into our lives as, you know, HR practitioners and people that support the HR profession?
Well, the easy answer is that right now at this day and age, there's more data, you know, quote, out there about people than has ever existed in the course of history. Now, that data is exponentially growing every day. So where is it going to go? Who knows? But I really believe it's limitless. And that's why there's going to have to be some kind of control sooner or later put to, you know, what employers can use. You know, for instance, part of it's already been addressed by the GINA Act that came out that basically says, you know, any DNA information from certain genetic testing can't be used against employees or applicants. Now, that particular legislation never would have dreamt to exist 10 years ago, 15 years ago, because the technology and that data just didn't exist. So to kind of answer your question coming in the back door, we don't know what types of data are going to exist tomorrow or 6 months from now or 6 years from now. So it's really difficult to tell. I think in manners of data about individual, it's the kind of situation that we almost have to see what evolves in real time and determine how to rewrite our policies, practices, and procedures in real time to meet the new reality.
Nice. So what are you hearing from your clients? So you're a vendor, and you guys are obviously, you know, work hard to partner with companies and practitioners and make their lives better and easier. So what are you hearing from all your clients typically that's top of mind with them?
Well, regarding social media or just everything across the board?
You know what? Just everything across the board. Just the thing that's popping
okay.
up that you're talking them off a ledge or reinforcing, don't go to the ledge.
Well, I think that's really easy answer then. What we hear the most is compliance assistance. You know, the federal government and now even states are rewriting the rules to what employers can do in the screening process for their applicants. You know, there are several federal regulations that every employer, regardless of type of industry, public, private, doesn't matter, but there are several federal regulations that every employer has to follow. But now a lot of the states are chiming in and saying, okay, we like what the feds are doing, but we're going to throw our two cents in as well. You know, as a matter of fact, just 2 months ago, the state of Colorado significantly restricted the use of credit reports in background checks for all Colorado-based employers. You know, that is a pretty standard practice now for states. They're really restricting what you can do with credit reports. But the point being is employers are being challenged in ways now than they've never been in the past because there's so many different compliance areas just in my business, the employment screening business, but then they're dealing with everything else. HR professionals are so significantly overtaxed, in my opinion, on what they have to keep up with that it's very, very difficult. So anytime they can be thrown a life preserver for one particular area of their responsibilities, you know, they're clamoring for it. And, you know, so with us, compliance is it. They need to know what do the feds say we have to do. And, oh, by the way, we just opened a new office in Oregon. What can or can't we do in the state of Oregon that we can do here in Kansas? Those are everyday questions.
And I have literally ran an operation in Oregon, and it was a pain in the ass. Good reference. Just good reference on that.
Welcome to the left coast, huh?
I was over literally back in a different lifetime when the first time that we did an increase in Oregon and California on the first minimum wage increase, I was there at that time, and it was a it was amazing at the complexities that were built into just those little things. And it's exponentially worse now. So,
right.
Great information on that. And so how do you, I mean, literally, how do you help your clients put their head around where do we start in evaluating how compliant we really are? Let's just go with that.
Well, we do it with a pretty exhaustive educational process. We are constantly disseminating information to our clients about changes, you know, so much so that we get fearful sometimes that our clients kind of get tired of getting new message blasts. But it changes, things change so often and sometimes so seemingly insignificantly, but it can be a game changer on a company's operations. You know, this credit report deal in Colorado is a good example of that. So I'll give you another one right here since we're in Overland Park. Drug testing rules in Kansas and Missouri differ significantly. So if you have an employer right here in Overland Park, we are about 5 miles from the state line. But what you can do with a drug test for an employee that's going to take a drug test in Overland Park or in Johnson County, Kansas, is completely different than some of the regulations right across the state line in the Missouri. So it's very difficult for HR professionals to keep up with that, you know, to remember all the rules. They really need different various organizations they can lean on to help them keep themselves in check with that. Because sometimes 5 miles can be the difference between doing something legitimately and setting yourself up for a lawsuit.
Well, and especially if you start out in Colorado and based on their laws get really high, and then you've got a job opportunity in both Kansas and Missouri as you're going down the interstate.
You're
going to
ruin somebody's day.
You might have some issues. You might have some issues with that. I'm just giving an example. Probably happened like right when we were talking, that probably happened. So no judgment. That's their deal. But I'm just saying it could happen.
Yep, no, things like that happen every day.
Yes, not to me, thank goodness, anymore. I'll just put it that way. That was a different
right.
lifetime, different chapter in my life. So, but, well, fantastic. So, technology. Where's technology playing into, let's do this two parts. So, where is technology playing into being a vendor to solutions to the HR space? Question one. Question two. Where's technology affecting the HR professional the most? So question one, how's technology helping, hurting, affecting you as a vendor providing services to HR?
Okay. Well, number one, technology allows us to cull more data, obviously much, much faster than has ever been able to be done before. It also allows us to have a wider geographic scope in a lot of the work that we do, so we're not being so limited. As you know, when I started in this business, you know, over 20 years ago, it was a completely different landscape. It was doing things with snail mail and people with boots on the ground, if you will. So the technology has enhanced the process because an HR professional can get more information. They can get better information. You know, in other words, they get information that is confirmed to be the subject in question, when in the past, that wasn't always the case. And they can get a lot faster. So it helps them make those decisions. Every hiring professional that is listening to this has had somebody leaning over their shoulder saying, hire my people faster. I need people now. I need people yesterday. So they need information and results faster, and technology helps us do that. Now, unfortunately, that same technology is also a double-edged sword because sometimes it puts a little unreal expectation upon HR professionals' minds that they expect things sometimes a little too fast. And there is still some manual work that has to be done to make the technology sing the right notes, if you will. But I think getting, you know, more information, better information, faster information is obviously moving the right direction for HR, you know, today.
Well, and you know what? We had the show that we did at 12 o'clock. We were on with my co-host is also big in the HR tech space, and we were on with Elaine Orler, who owns a huge, very prominent consulting firm in the HR space. And what was interesting, and I thought this was really profound, and I have never heard it before, oddly enough, is when it comes to technology, you're either running toward or running away from something, right? It's never static. You don't have a static opportunity. So
No, I agree with that wholeheartedly, yeah.
I thought that was very simplistically profound kind of statement and way to think about it, right? So, because if I'm running,
no, absolutely.
You know, if I'm, you know, if we're running from a situation, whether it's technology or a process or a procedure, whatever it is, then we got to be prepared for that. Or if we're running toward, we have to be prepared for that. But there's really nothing ever static when it comes to HR, right? We just don't have that luxury. It's not on a shelf. It's not a product on a shelf that maybe is very slightly depreciating in value, right? It's not
right,
the case.
Right. No, I agree. It is one of the most dynamic professions out there. And unless you're in it or you're around HR, you might not assume that, but I couldn't agree with your statement more. And everybody listening to this is going to agree with you wholeheartedly as well.
Well, and that's, you know, that's what makes it, you know, tough. That's what makes it kind of super interesting. And I think that's what makes it so perplexing to companies and culturally is because
right.
it is so dynamic and it's never perfect. It's never the same. It can get close. And so all of that, I think, gives a lot of latitude, in my opinion, to not addressing things. It's kind of an excuse. Well, it's, you know, we just can't really get our hands around that, which, you know, I'm a process person and I absolutely don't believe that. I think the more objective data points you put in a process, you can dramatically predict and affect course correct, pivot, whatever, and change for the better. A talent process, a people process, and I think people just give up and don't think that through, unfortunately, either from being overtaxed or just culturally that's not the case. So just my soapbox
right.
at the moment. Well, we got time for we got about 2 minutes and 45 seconds left. So what's the one thing in 2013 or in the last, you know, year that actually has given you kind of a burst of inspiration? Something maybe that it's like, God, I needed to hear that, or I didn't know that, and I'm glad I got that. Other than being on Drive-Thru HR.
Well, I tell you what, Drive-Thru HR is going to be number one, so thanks for covering that. You know, the thing I take the most inspiration from, it comes from my employees and really my clients. I love it when they bring forward ideas that I've never had because, number one, it's invigorating. But I also love to see the thought process take place outside my personal little shell. You know, some of the best things that my company does come from our employees, but some of the most innovative things come from our clients. When they come to us and say, hey, if you could do X, you would shave Y number of hours off any given week or month. That almost kind of becomes a challenge for us to use either technology or processes or sometimes just good old-fashioned, you know, elbow grease to get those things done because we want to help these HR people out there. Well, as I mentioned earlier, incredibly overtaxed. They're pulled in 100 different directions. So if we can make their lives just a little bit easier, we take that as a really fun challenge.
Well, and that's great answer, and one more time, tell people where they can find you and connect with you, and then we're wrapped up. Great show.
Great, thank you. We'll see. ValidityScreening.com is our website, and we're on Twitter at ValidityScreen, no ing on the end of it. And there's some great stuff going on today with the Kansas Sherm Conference all over that Twitter feed. So, yeah, jump on there if you couldn't make it to the conference today and hear about some of the great things going on out of here.
Perfect. Darren, thanks so much. And, folks, you can follow the conversation, the Twitter stream at #KSSHRM13, so Kansas Sherm 13. Follow what's going on, and we're out of here.